Welcome to The Being Leader. I'm Annabel Graham. Welcome to this episode of The Being Leader, the podcast that discusses how we need to show up and be as leaders, reflecting on what impacts our behaviours, our relationships and our outcomes, and allows us to focus more on our approach to leading ourselves, our teams and our organisations. Today, I'm joined by Chris Barrett. Chris is a transformation director, COO, board advisor and a closet entrepreneur. He has over 20 years of leadership, transformation and change experience, operating at board and C-suite level. Chris has worked in many sectors, including private equity, education, financial services, outsourcing and defence, for organisations such as Capita, Lava Source HR, Axelos, the RAF and divisions of the UN. Welcome, Chris.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
So I really like at the start for people to just tell their own story for how they've got to where they've got to. So it would be great if you can tell everyone who's listening a little bit more about how you, what your journey is as a leader and how you got to the role you have.
Fantastic. So I think we'll have to go back a few years, probably more than I care to mention, but I think the journey probably began with an MBA. Previous to that, it was a graduate training scheme like so many of us. And then an MBA kind of opened my eyes to the world and set me on a path of consulting through BPR consulting, if people remember that, but a process re-engineering through to program management, through to transformation management, through to transformation director, through a number of companies. So I think mostly I've got a consulting background, not for the big four, for outfits like Impact Plus and Hitachi and Capita. Great organizations to work for, always great people. And learned so much across different sectors to get to a place where, yeah, the transformations became bigger and larger and more challenging, with more money and more benefits on the tap on the back end of it. So, yeah, quite a consulting background when I look at it. And of course, I've dabbled into COO positions and running parts of organizations, and that's been mostly still transformational. So I've described myself as a transformation director, maybe a transformation specialist. But also probably a closet entrepreneur. There's a number of organizations I get involved with to advise old friends, advise new friends, and see where the organization may go through funding, through private equity. But yeah, quite a journey.
So when you're talking about transformation, because I'm conscious everyone's got a different understanding about what that means, that word means. What does it mean to you?
So I mean, I think it's taking an organization or part of an organization from A to B. So you are making a clear, discernible change. You're addressing a business problem or a business opportunity, and you're taking an organization from A to B. Now, B is, chances are, just not achievable. So you're ending up going A to C, and C is probably a great place that no one else really thought of. But that's everything. That's people, process, IT. Location quite often, data. It's changing anything and everything to get the organization where it wants to be. That's it in a nutshell for me. I've deliberately avoided the word digital there.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I've had conversations with a few clients where we've got a digital transformation and we've got a people transformation and we've got some other, and you think, hang on, you can't have three. You've basically just got one with different strands. Let's be honest here.
And that's one of my biggest bugbears is trying to silo transformation. So back in some of the experiences, IT's been out of scope. I'm like, well, IT can't be out of scope. It's part of the same organization. It will impact and be enabled by IT. Another organization saying, yeah, we're making the change across all these areas. I said, that's continuous improvement. That's not transformation. That's not got a beginning or a middle or an end. That's just ongoing. And that's gonna drain people. Yeah, so there's the other piece. Transformation should be, should have like a good book. It should have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the people involved in the transformation should really be exiting stage left when they're done. And when we say done, you've delivered some outcomes. There's some benefits to the organization. It's tangible. It's finished. There's a wrap party, and you're done. That's a transformation, not a continuous improvement. And there's bugbear number two already.
So what I find interesting with that, you know, if we think about how change is being discussed in the business arena currently, the pace of change has changed dramatically. I think it's been accelerated over the last 2 years with the pandemic. And actually, everyone who thought that they could bumble on as they always were have recognized that actually we're in that sort of like shifting decade where things are going to be a little bit different. And change is relatively complex and continuous in an awful lot of phases. And what I find quite interesting is you're saying, well, actually, no, if we're looking at transformation, it's a very linear process. So how does that then sit with this idea of complexity within change if transformation is linear?
I suppose I come back to some of the people involved here. So if you've got a transformation and you've got your beginning, your middle, your end, and you know where B is or C might be, you're only going to tackle the complexity of that change if you bite off a specific element of scope and you define that piece of scope. And now we're into almost a project management world where you understand what you're trying to achieve. You've ring-fenced it, and therefore you've tackled the complexity by not getting distracted by everything. And this is a common one as well. When put off, you land in an organization, you are the transformation person, you're the focal point, and you become the lightning conductor for anything that smells like change or continuous improvement or transformation. But clearly your defined success is to deliver something, go from A to B. And the complexity isn't the A to B journey that you're on. It's everything else that gets thrown into it. It's you're instantly, every problem in the organization is a nail, and the hammer has just arrived. It adds to the complexity. So my real focus is to tackle the complexity. It's to define the scope and be laser focused on delivering that. We hear so much about transformations that fail and why have they failed. Some of the answers are quite simple. You just expected too much of the transformation, or you didn't protect the transformation from horrible scope creep.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Yeah. Do you know, it was funny. It's funny that phrase I didn't learn till about 10 years ago. And I don't know whether I'm naive or just I've never had it. I think it was one of the latter. We never used to allow it to happen, but it becomes an ever increasing challenge. Okay. So if you've got leaders who are embarking on a transformation initiative, you know, whether that be at an organizational level or at a functional level, what are the factors that you feel they really need to be considering before they start on that journey?
It's an old cliche, but you've got to understand where you are to kick off with. Where are you? Where do you want to go? So are you clear about what you want to achieve? And how you're going to achieve it. Now, how is where people focus mostly. It's either going to be your resources, your scope, who you're going to bring in, who's going to do it. But unless you really understand where you are at the moment, then you don't know how you're going to change. If you don't know anything about A, you can't really head to B. A lot of that is around people. So I'm very keen on whether it's overt or covert, is to actually understand the organization. And quite often there's a survey monkey that it can be sent out. How do you feel about your current capability with respect to IT? Is a great place to start on this. 90 service management is a great place to do this. How is your capability? How do you think the business perceives your level of service? Now, instantly, you've got a full kind of a sentiment analysis, and you give free text as well. You give a full sentiment analysis as to what are you up against? Where are you right now? And that's the distance between where you are now and your transformation journey. That's a big one for me. And I think a lot of people miss out on that one. They think that a few conversations, usually at the top level, tell you what the problem is. But really, you want a good survey monkey of 50 people with some free text just to wade through and go, my word, this organization is halfway there already, or, and my word, it's a long way behind where they think they currently are. Well, that's a great place to start. And then you move on to the bread and butter transformation. Where's my scope? What's my resources? What's my critical path? How do I involve IT, HR, finance? What do I do? They're the bread and butter kind of transformation questions. But I would really want to start on, what's the current state? Where are you at? Where are your people at? Where are their heads at?
Yeah. So it's getting that really, what's the word I'm looking for? Vivid picture of reality, whether it be pretty or not so pretty. And from both a process of people and an organizational ability. And are we all at that point, are we also thinking that we should be looking at where does this look in the context of the environment in which we're working in, our competitors and all of that external piece? Because I would assume that.
No, absolutely. And that's almost, it's change management, but with a little bit more sense, a little bit more nous. There are tools out there. I mean, I came across one in the last couple of weeks called Runway, and it's sentiment analysis, but it can be anonymous, and therefore it levels the culture in an organization. Anyone can have their say. You don't have to go down to the service desk to find out what people are thinking, because they can actually tell you through a tool like that. And that's it's powerful stuff, because it tells you where you are. And like I say, some organizations are probably halfway towards where they want to be culturally already. They just haven't uncovered the pockets of where the good ideas are. And there's another one of my favorite expressions is good ideas come from anywhere. So don't hide them and don't unplug yourselves from them.
Mm. And do you find that often we don't reach out more widely into the organization to find them?
It's the loudest people. Yeah. And this is whether it's more of a Western culture than anything else, but it's the loudest people. It's the people that people look up to. It's the higher up the hierarchy. It's the well paid. It's the tub thumpers. We're listening to them, but yeah, there are only a handful of people. The good ideas are probably hidden somewhere else. And people have been saying these things. They've been having these good ideas. I mean, way back when there used to be a suggestion box, and that was royally ignored, wasn't it?
But, it's no different.
Yeah. And I generally believe that it's not just the ideas as well. It's the problems. It's the constraints of a program. Did you know that? Well, there's a legacy system over here that's plumbed in. No one's mentioned it so far. But unless you're listening to John or Jenny that's down there and has been there 20 years, then you won't find it. Until month 6 of the program, and oh heck, now we've got a series of APIs that need recreating, and that sounds expensive. So yeah, there's a way of doing it, and it's quite often very, 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 very people focused.
Okay. And what skills and capabilities do you think are essential to be able to put really good transformational change in place?
If we look at the leadership, and there's different styles of leadership out there, but it needs a clear vision. It needs a clear sense of where we're going to. And that is quite often directive, but it can also be collegiate. But as long as you're able to be very clear about that vision, this is where the organization is going. This is the reason for this transformation. This is how we're going to get there. This is what success looks like when we get there. Then you've got a real starting point. And leaders that are able to A, have that vision, but B, be able to articulate it and communicate it. That's one of the best starting points, and that's one of the best capabilities and skills. So if you turn up at an organization as an incoming transformation director, you're looking for that C-suite person that has got the vision, not just understood it in investor terms and team terms, but is able to put it in a 30-second elevator pitch that people can actually rally behind, understand. It's in basic English. It's not in business speak. It's not in management consultant speak. It's, oh, right, we're entering a new market and we need to succeed by doing this. Got it. Happy. And that's why I like, here's the tool I like, and it's the postcard from the future. So time travel yourself into the future. Your transformation's finished. The transformation guys have exited stage left, and this is what it feels like. We have entered a new market. We have achieved interest from these customers. We have achieved this level of turnover. We have implemented this system. We have bought a team on that has this capability and has a future attached to it. Now, I've just reeled off a postcard from the future. But once you translate it into meaningful stuff, then everyone has a cascade, whether you're using balanced scorecard or OKR, people know where their place is in that transformation. It becomes real. And if you keep repeating it, this is where we're going and this is why we're doing it, people will make your transformation work for you. I keep saying it, where it isn't rocket science, but some of this stuff people find complicated.
Mm. So you're saying about this piece about repeating, I often find that if I think about the change in the transformation programs I've been part of over the years, people get bored of saying it. They think somebody should have got it at the first piece of communication. And I don't know whether you found that as well, is actually we don't keep that communication going long enough to really embed that.
No, never. Never. It's the ongoing retrospective or rap party joke. Is like things you never hear at that lesson learned session as well. We over communicated on that program, didn't we? No one ever said it, because you don't. It's like we didn't. We had ideas of SharePoints and even letters and town halls and regular updates. We had all these lovely ideas at the beginning, but then we didn't see it through. People were new to the organization and had to learn off someone else what this transformation program was all about. And people left and took ideas with them. But did we stay true to the vision? That's great. But then did we keep people updated and interested as we went through? We've hit a milestone. And by the way, we're having a large party somewhere, or we're just going to get together and tell you what it means for you. And you can ask any questions and we'll all be in a room at the same time. I mean, that's communication. Pick the right level, the right medium for communication for the organization, but follow through on it. People are people. They need to know.
Yeah. And there's also that piece where it's the Chinese whispers of conversations where we're not saying the same thing all the time. So you've got a different message coming from a different place, so we dilute what we're looking to achieve.
And that's it. And again, going back into the depths of time, you used to have A3 posters near the coffee bar, near the bathrooms, and you, well, okay, I understand what the program's all about because there's the mantra, and it's on the wall. Obviously, it's a new world now. We don't see that so often, but virtually, that should crop up on a Teams meeting. It should crop up on different places. People should be bored of this is where we're going and what we're doing, but they shouldn't be bored of the progress and what it means to them. And did you know this is quite interesting? And this will enable you to do this. Yeah, you can be bored of the strap line by all means and the vision, but that can be hard coded. That can be branded into people. That's fine, but make it interesting as well. People need to get behind it.
I used to love it. You just reminded me. I used to love an old communication poster on the back of the bathroom door. That's invariably where they always ended up. And outside the tea room.
So even now you remember them. That's what it is.
Yeah, usually a bit tatty. But I think we forget, you know, as you said, we work in a digital world, so we don't go back to that old style comms. But actually, you know, we have the capability to automatically change people's screensavers and backgrounds on a universal level across an organization. You can still have your poster. It's just when you switch your laptop on in the morning.
And that's all it is. It's not hard. It's not hard, but it's still remembering that people need something. And that if you're asking something of people, subject matter experts in the business, they're not in the transformation program itself, but you will need something from them. You've got to give them something as well. Mm. So what does it mean to them? How do they contribute to the success? How does it make life easy for them once it's done, once it's in, whatever that is? Yeah, that's all part of it.
And what's the impact for them? You know, what does it mean to them? How will they see it?
Impact, benefits, and there are things that people are scared of. So you want to overcome that and say, no, it sounds scary, but what it really means is this. It sounds horrible and expensive and big and nasty, but let's take it in bite-sized chunks. Mm. This is what it really means. And did you know you're doing half of it already? Now you've got the kind of language that people can buy into, and they'll give you the time. Because okay. Ops people don't always have to give you the time. They don't. Mm.
So you were talking about the fact that leadership capability is really, really key. So when you're thinking about leadership, what's that link between organizational transformation and transformational leadership? Because that word gets bandied around a lot, and it's the same word in different contexts. So what does that mean to you?
My best way of understanding that is usually in terms of roles and role profiles, and it's the same old suspect. So, I mean, a transformation director will be a program director or program lead, whichever size kind of a transformation we're dealing with. They're the expert in the room, and they know what they're looking for. They know how to deliver the transformation, and they're the people that should be guiding the business as usual, the steady state organizational structure. So that's where that capability comes from. And what we're really looking for is that reflective capability in the people that will stay after the transformation. So the CEO is the person with the vision, will face off to the transformation director and make sure that the vision is clear and this is good and this is bad. This is where we're going. This is where we're not going. And then through to the CFO. The CFO's got to understand that, yeah, there's a cost attached to this. Hopefully it's been either capitalized or it's out of an exceptionals pot, in which case they are more happy than if it hits bottom line and EBITDA, obviously. But if it does, then these are the benefits we're going to bring. So get your guys to help me to articulate and realize those benefits. Then we'll see ROI, value for money. And now you're talking at the CFO's language. The CIO, again, you're looking for help, capability. You know, they will know more than anyone else where the technology bear traps are, minefields. There's always those. But also, they've got the biggest estate and probably the biggest budget. So how are you going to impact them and make their life easy? And how can it be reciprocated? CIOs, CTOs, they're change savvy. I'm stereotyping here horribly, obviously, but they are used to programs, projects, and implementing systems, small and large. But transformation includes HR, culture, people, change, and obviously benefits as well. So how do you get them plugged in such that their standing, this is personal now, how their standing in the boardroom is actually met as well? So you're looking for almost the flip side, the transformational capability in CEO, CFO, CIO, CTO, and through to the change in HR as well. Now, that's usually the nicer place to go. And I'm probably talking out of turn here completely, but people focus. And if I'm talking about a transformation that is driven by people, then you've usually got more of an ear from the HRD, the group HR director, whoever that might, senior person might be, because you're looking after people and you're seeing how they can contribute to the transformation. And if you're looking out for the impact of transformation on people, then yeah, you're pushing on an open door there.
Okay. So if you think about those common mistakes that you see leadership teams and organizations make when it comes to taking their business forward, you know, if they're looking to grow over a few years, or there's a fundamental change that needs to be put in place, what are they?
Yeah. There are a few of these.
Okay, we've got a while.
With bugbears, yeah, bugbears. And we've mentioned the difference between running the business and changing the business. Confusing the two kind of dilutes the actual purpose of the transformation itself. You can blur continuous improvement with transformation. That doesn't help either from a transformation perspective. But it comes down, again, back to people and resources. If you're trying to transform an organization and deliver change, using people that have a day job and they're trying to do it on the side of their desk, then you're really going to go either a lot slower or not get there at all. And it's also a mindset and a capability piece. An operations director is used to achieving things on a monthly basis, and it's the same things, and they're going to improve it, and they're going to look after their people and deliver whatever it is the organization delivers. That's a different mindset from doing something differently by implementing a change. That's a different mindset. So they're there for the duration. They're not the I'm going to change something and disappear mentality. That's almost a different side of the brain sometimes. So you're trying to deliver transformation using operational people. It's not just the resource, it's also the capability and sometimes the mentality that kind of stretches itself. You won't deliver the transformation with certain people, and we've all got names and people of great operations guys and girls from our pasts. They would not, in their own mind, deliver a transformation. And they finish, what do they do next? That's whereas some of us are a little bit more risk accepting. So I'll finish one transformation, right, where's my next gig? That's a different mindset to someone who would like to stay and deliver through an organization. So there's one, mixing operational business as usual, running the business with changing the business. Let's go to the next one. Probably expectation setting. So yes, we've got a transformation here, and we'd like to enter a new market. But by the way, we'd like to take 5% off the bottom line as well. So costs we want to reduce by 5%, but we want to be a disruptor as well. Hang on a second. How many different strategies do you want to throw into this transformation? Because you've just confused me in the space of 30 seconds. 5% cost reduction is a different style of program to entering a new market. It's a different style of program to bringing new people on and changing a culture of an organization and protecting its future in terms of people and staff. They're all different flavors, but expecting the one transformation team or person to come in and then just spread themselves seven ways across seven different mandates is just it's not realistic, is it? It's not allowing me to focus on the one thing that I'm going to make a difference on. So unrealistic expectations, and behind that comes unrealistic resources as well. So yes, of course, we'd like you to deliver that 5 or 10% cost saving, and you can beg, steal and borrow people from the organization in order to do that, because we haven't got any money. So insufficient funding, resources, expectation setting, and this comes down to the bread and butter points around what makes transformation governance work. It's scope, it's resource, it's timing. It's, if you define those, you're back to steel triangle type stuff, which has its place, but it's also useful in actually ensuring the success of your transformation. Be clear on those things.
Yeah, but if we think about going back to that beginning about having that real clarity on what we need to achieve and what those strands are, then that really links into those unrealistic expectations and resources piece, because we're trying to be all things to all men instead of seeing this as a staged piece. Because you know, you might have seven things you need to change, you can't do them all together.
And now that comes back to the leadership capability to and see the transformation capability within that leadership team. So if you've got that and they accept that we've got a very clear vision and a place we want to go, this new idea you've got sounds fantastic, but if we throw it into the same program, we're gonna limit the ability of that program to deliver on its success. So the CFO is not happy because the benefits have been diluted. No one's happy because it's going to run out for an extra period, and the transformation guys and girls are on a clock, they're a meter running. So if you're going to run them for another 6 months worth of running a transformation program, is not likely to be not cheap. So your leadership needs to be protective, focused, almost an umbrella that protects it from additional scope and allows it to focus. And that's a different mindset from operational people quite often, who want to just achieve as much as they can. That's a good idea, let's do it. That's a good idea, let's do it. Sometimes transformation is protecting and rebuffing those things, or delaying them, or putting them into next year and the year after. Let them focus. And that's governance, and that's decision making, and quick decision making as well. There's no point in waiting until the next month's board meeting because you've burnt another month of transformation team cost. So no, we're not doing that. Excellent. Thank you. You've just saved us a month.
Lovely. So what I hear is it's you can have extras, but not at the same time. It's moving it, it's looking at what are those stages. You know, what are we going to tackle at what stage, and how many years may this then take us?
And when. So yes, time, resource, cost, quality, back to steel triangle type stuff. But it does have its place. But if you talk in those terms, you've just increased my scope. So what do? Reduce the quality, increase resource, increase the time. It's not magic, and we're not going to achieve it by osmosis. So how are we going to do this?
So we've got lack of clarity on those key factors. I'm really resisting saying the word priorities after I learned that it only became a plural in the 1940s.
I wasn't around then.
I know, but isn't that funny? You'll have had the same. How many organizations we go into and they go, oh, I've got 15 priorities. And you think, we get down to 5 at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those 15 aren't going to happen. Or they're just activities rather than anything else. So we've got that lack of clarity, we've got lack of resource, we've got unrealistic expectations and unrealistic capability.
Let's bring comms in there as well. So
okay,
insufficient comms. So you've got to bring the people with you. We talk about current state and understanding where the organization is individually, as a team and as an entity itself. So test the water, but keep testing the water. And again, that's why I like some of those tools like potentially Runway. It's an ability to find out where you actually are all the way through, and it is incredibly powerful to say, here's the change curve, we're in the valley of despair, things don't feel good. I can guarantee you we're in the valley of despair because we know where the people are, what they're thinking. We've had these anecdotes from people, not just one or two, but across a team of 50 people. We can sense where people are with respect to this. That's a great playback, not a case of trust us, we're in the valley of despair, we're going to pull out of it in the next few weeks, because that's really a leap of faith, isn't it? But if you're pulling on some of those tools, you've got, no, look at the sentiment here. People are are wary about this, they're unhappy about this, we're now going to go and tackle that. And this is what we're doing in the next month. So the next 2 months, we'll come back to this meeting, and we'll have, hopefully, a sentiment analysis that says, yeah, now I get it. And more people saying, yeah, I feel more confident about the future of the organization and this transformation. So taking people with you, not just the transformation people on the actual program itself, because they're experts, they know what they're doing. It's the people that is being impacted by the transformation. How are they feeling? Take them with you.
So if you think about those biggest learnings that you've had from leading and delivering transformation initiatives, what are they?
Some of those are to hold your own on those factors. So we know, we recognize this is going wrong because we're throwing a scope at it. And it's, I think it's the transformation person's, I say person because there are some great people out there, regardless of background again. It's having the strength to go back and say that. Now this is a contractor's world or a consultant's world quite often, and people are very protective. I don't want to upset the apple cart because I'm a contractor. I may be kicked out for saying things that aren't necessarily what people want to hear. But you have to say it. No one's going to thank you for that. Your personal brand, your consultancy brand, whoever you're working for, will not survive the damage of you just skirting over something that you know to be wrong. So as people get to be more capable in transformation and the experts are there, I think it's for those transformation people to have the courage of conviction to trust their gut quite often and their experience. So if scope's getting out of control, call it, say it. If you think the people are not coming along with you, say it, call it, give some examples, because the top team, they need to know it. If it's a board, it's a board. If it's a divisional exec, they need to know it. And they may not thank you initially, but 6 months, they absolutely will. And you've got to protect that brand, whether it's your individual team or consultancy brand. You've got to protect the brand as well and do the right thing. So courage and conviction. There we go.
I'm conscious we've been talking a lot about getting in specific teams to be able to lead this large-scale transformation. But in some organisations, that's not going to be the case. You know, and we are going to have, it's going to be something that they either maybe don't have the deep pockets to be able to do it, or they're just not big enough to be able to make that happen. But there's a large initiative that still needs to happen. So if you're a leader starting out on that, what do you need to be conscious of if you're sitting internally in the business?
So we're talking about a situation where resources are limited, maybe
so they're not going to be able to bring in a consultant to be able to lead this through. It's actually it's happening within the organization.
Yeah, and this is where some grown-up conversations have to be had, because you've got a choice. So you either go and find the additional resource, which means if you haven't got the budget, you've got to carve out the time from people inside the organization. Mm-hmm. You've got to find the transformational talent within the organization. You've got to find the energy, frankly, as well. So people who have got the appetite and the energy to go into a transformation program, who will then trust the people you can afford, be it a repurposed person internally who will need backfilling, or an external like myself who's going to be there to guide people. And now you're talking about a level of discipline that you probably don't have with the luxury of in a big transformation program, as everyone's got their own role, everyone knows what they're doing, everyone's got a work stream, everyone's comfortable. We're going to spend a lot of money here, but we're all comfortable what we're doing. We don't need the level of governance and discipline there. Yes, we do, but not to the level you would need if you're going to use fractional resource. So fractional resource internally or externally is probably a newer way of tackling transformation. We don't have to buy full-time consultants anymore. We can buy fractional resources. We can buy fractional capability and expertise. If it's system expertise, absolutely. And we see this in human capital management and different systems in there. There are very definitely people there who work to a number of days. They will very happily juggle five or six different projects and programs because that's their level of expertise. They are Dayforce experts. They are Oracle experts. And they can do that. That's great. But for a small organization, you don't have to buy them all because you don't want to pay their day rate for a full month or 6 months or 12. But you can buy that. Having the discipline and focusing your efforts on the transformation lead or the PMO, there's a couple of people that you might be able to afford. They will be able to manage that for you. So fractional resources is quite often the answer here. increasingly the answer, I think, in recent and future years.
Yeah. And it is, it's that ability to have that expertise input of somebody who's probably got a lot more experience, which you wouldn't normally be able to afford if you were bringing them in on a permanent basis. But what I liked was your piece about saying, which I know I've seen time and again, where we haven't looked widely for who's actually got the energy within the business, who can maybe help and lead some of this. Or if we do look widely and find them, then it goes back to the point of mixing the day job with the change piece. Yeah. We don't fully remove them from their role, because actually they're probably capable and might actually even have the energy and the will. But we then ask too many, we ask them to wear too many hats.
Yeah, and there are ways through it. I mean, some organizations have moved to 4-day weeks, 9-day fortnights. That Friday is potentially Transformation Friday. So their rewards might be different. So maybe you want to pay them for the extra Friday when you're dedicated to transformation. And that's one way forwards. Or you just carve out a day and say, right, Monday afternoons, maybe we're going to focus on transformation for the week, touch base on a Wednesday, hit it again on a Friday. So, and that's another old tool as well, Bull Monday, Die Friday. That keeps people a train of thought as to how am I contributing to this transformation. And if the operations are involved in that as well, we make sure that we're not breaking people. So most important, don't break people, but good ideas in the organization. And if we can use a fraction of someone, I don't normally like it, but this is where it goes to, yeah, proper governance. And it's worth spending the money as well. And this is where maybe a PMO function is not as well understood as it could be, because that is the organization that can make sure we are deploying resources properly, not breaking people, using fractional resource, hitting milestones, speaking to the right people, and focusing on what is important, the priorities. So there's room for some intelligence in there, whether it's your top level expertise, whether it's your PMO, and whether it's your fractional resource within the organization. And that's all of that I've just said is not an expensive, massive transformation program of six consultants, three-person PMO and a transformation director. It doesn't have to be that.
But there's also the need to listen to those people when they're doing it. They've been put in those roles for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so trust having, enabling them to have the authority to be able to do what they need to do.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe that's a leadership trait as well, the actual empowerment. So your role is to do this, you're empowered to do this, but you need to keep us involved on a two-weekly or monthly basis and then go run and trust the expertise. If you brought the transformation expertise in, yeah, then use it, make it work, quiz it. And yeah, make them work. Someone like myself, I'm putting myself in these shoes here. Make me have the answers. Make me align everything I'm doing to the benefits and the outcomes. Make me engage with people and make sure I'm not breaking people because we're asking too much of them. The ask is of me as the transformation person. If I'm third party and I come in as a contractor or a consultant, then that is my responsibility. Make sure I do it. Make me accountable.
So accountability and empowerment. So we've talked around a few things here. We've talked about that need to have a really, really clear, unfiltered view of reality to understand where we are.
Yeah.
That there's a need for a really clear vision. So we understand where we're going and what the metrics are, and that postcard from the future of being really able to make that a tangible thing so we can communicate and sell the benefits and get everyone on board with it. We've talked about the need for leadership ability to recognize what we need to do, but also take people with us and be able to communicate that message and keep communicating it and over communicate it as we go on. We've talked about empowering those who are driving that transformation and being careful of not oversetting those expectations or lacking the resources that we need to do. Which is some great stuff. So if we were talking to people out there who are beginning to embark on that first transformation or change journey, what would be the sort of 3 to 5 key tips that you'd say to leaders? This is what you need to do.
We mentioned a few here. So yeah, probably take the time up front to make sure you're ready. Organizational readiness for change is different to having a transformation team ready to implement that change. I think we used to call it making sure the goal is ready for the ball. It's a key part of the actual transformation. So, and then everything flows in there. Have you got the clear vision? Have you got the idea of the resources? Have you got the means to secure those resources? Have you got the expertise? Are you going to trust that expertise? So are you ready to build a transformation program? Do you know what success looks like? So that back to your clear vision again and your postcard from the future. Have you got your communications in play? So are you ready to over-communicate? Do you know who you're communicating to? Do you know what your current state of those people are? All of your shareholders, but also stakeholders. Who are your zealots? Who are your champions? Who are your blockers? How are you going to navigate through those? And then where's your program management nous going to come from? So who's going to plot your critical path? Who's going to spot your blockers, your massive lead times? We used to say it was, and this is where the trust comes in as well. So the thing that's just dropped into my mind is I used to say that legals and trade unions need extra attention because you can't plan those. But you need to trust someone that says, I need 6 to 9 months to engage and consult with the unions here. You can't compress that and just launch something on a workforce. And you can't ride roughly over a contract or different legal positions in different entities because they will just break programs. So you need to trust someone that has that level of nous and forethought and is able to look at a program plan in order to spot where it could go wrong, involve the right people, buy the right time to solve the problems. So there's almost a list. It's almost like a checklist, isn't it, really? Have you thought about all of these things? Have you lined up everything? And then come back to your steel triangle and think, is this really, really achievable? Have I got the right scope, time, resource, quality to get this right? All of the above. Does that help?
It does. And the question is, do you still get excited by doing it when you go into that mess and that complexity and everything else that's there?
I love arriving at a new place thinking this is a fantastic challenge. And I go back to some of the earlier programs when one of the clients, and this is just a small epitaph. The client said, you've got a plan for this, right? You know what you're doing. And of course, this was compliance and it was all completely brand new. So I've got a great plan. And walked off back to the team of consultants and said, guys, we need a plan. And you've just told the client you've got a great plan. Yeah, it was simple. It was graft and intelligence. There's enough graft and intelligence in this room, and let's all back ourselves here. You will absolutely solve this problem first of all, and then deliver it. So we cracked the compliance problem and delivered it. That comes back to some of the enjoyment is just knowing you can crack it, backing yourself, and knowing you can actually solve a transformation program problem. Opportunity, you can make a difference, and that's part of the enjoyment. The other part of the enjoyment is very people focused. You're always going to meet a character if you're operating at a board or C-suite level. Those are almost cartoon characters of characters. They are extreme sometimes. They're extremely charismatic sometimes, and very often they're very inspirational as well. And so that's a privilege and a real enjoyment point there to land and see what a business problem actually is with the characters involved in the room and be able to solve it and deliver on it by backing yourself and backing your team. That's massively enjoyable.
Well, look, Chris, thank you. Thank you for taking on this, on the journey through some of the challenges that can come up and some of the things that people need to consider when we're doing it.
Absolute pleasure. No, thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Being Leader.